especially it's very difficult to sort of talk to the traumatized child. I find that the most difficult. And there are, you know, different ways of making them talk. And I don't want to say my experience, I just would like to hear your.
Well, why don't we go right there, and let me mention that Ruth Teichbrook did the monograph for the Dark Center on the issues of the traumatized child. So it's a wonderful one for us. Let's put that up next.
You can find the little guidebook upstairs.
Yes.
That you did.
Do you want to start with that?
Well, sure. I mean, I already kind of referred to it, but I mean, it depends on the age, of course. But yes. But a younger child, I mean, just to get down, literally physically down to their level. I mean, sitting on the floor versus sitting on a couch. You know, asking, doing something with them is one of the best ways because, I mean, you're this big stranger and, draw a picture, play dolls, do whatever the child wants to do. But also at the same time, not treating them like a child. I mean, explaining in their language, well, you know, I'm a reporter and I write stories in the newspaper. Do your parents get the newspaper? You know, and then try to like give them some ability to understand why you're there. You're not just their friend. You know, that's one of the worst things you can do is pretend you're their friend and then they start talking and they don't have any idea what you're going to do with that story.
I find usually it's better to talk to them on their own rather than with their family, parents.
Get them away from their mom.
If I can just piggyback off what you're saying, I did a story in Tampa. This little boy had leukemia, and the father decided that he was going to build him this huge playhouse, a treehouse, and he did, and it was against the covenants in the neighborhood, and all the people went nuts, and they wanted it torn down. So, of course, it became like this huge story, and I still remember his name, Ray Sassine, but, well, of course, Hard Copy was there, and Inside Edition, and all these people, you know, who could care less about this kid, and the mother saw this as a great opportunity to really shove it to the, you know, homeowners association. The kid had just gone through chemo, and it was just like, he was just not into it, and the mother's like, talk to him, and we showed up, we were the second in line to come and interview him, and I was like, this is a disaster, this kid's never, and he was like, he did not want any part of it, and so I said to the photographer, I said, let's just go outside and shoot the treehouse, and if he wants to come around and talk, fine, and we were outside, and somehow, I ended up like chatting with him, and then playing frisbee with him. I just sat out there talking to him for 10, 15 minutes, and then I said, I go, look, if you don't want to, you don't have to, but I'd love to go up and see your treehouse. And he's like, yeah, let's go up there. And so I was up there playing with this kid. I had a kid the same age. It was fun. We were having a great time. And then I said, if you want to talk about your playhouse, I'd love to do it. If you don't want to, that's fine. I did the interview with him, and he had the greatest time with me, and it was a break from all this crap. And here's a line of, like, 10 photographers waiting to... And he came downstairs and was like, no way, I'm going to my room. So, but it gets back to what, you know, the key thing is, which is, you know, giving him control and also making him a person, you know. It wasn't just a story. This was a little kid, and everybody was treating him like he was a commodity, including his mother. And that was the thing, you know.
Great story. Yeah. Great story. Rachel?
I'm trying to think about the conflict of combining kids, and you're also talking about deadline pressure.
Yeah.
And, and I found myself, we're doing sort of, we're following around these folks who, this grant where these conflict counselors are going out with homicide investigators, trying to pair them together. I know some other places have done that. And since we have a relationship with the program, they're allowing us to go along. But I'm kind of finding myself in situations where you get these very young kids who one of their family members has just been murdered. You're not going to be there a long time because the counselors kind of come in, tell them what they can do for them, you know, they're a resource, you're there for a couple hours, and you're kind of interacting with these kids who are just, you know, I mean, you're not trying to get them to talk about a trauma, they are experiencing it at that point, and trying to figure out, like, what is a safe role for us, because some of these kids inevitably, I mean, all these people are sitting around trying to figure out about funerals and things, and you're there, and they start talking to you, and I'm trying to figure out, like, what is the kind of safe space there, so where you're not interrupting and causing harm, but then you're also understanding and realizing what they're going through so that you can report on it. You know, and I've had some little kids, it's like they almost feel like they want to entertain and please you a little bit because everybody else is so worried about what's going on. And then they say things and it kind of frightens you. I have this little kid who you know, his brother had been killed, and he's just, you know, a four-year-old and stuff, and just said, kind of over to the side after the talking, leans and he says, I'm pretty sure they're going to try to kill me, too. And I was just like, oh, I just wanted to, like, yeah, but someone please come over here and talk to this kid, because it's not my job to be the person talking to him. And I was kind of freaking out, and I just wanted to make him feel comfortable, but also, you know, be in the right kind of role. And I thought, but there's not time.
Now, Rachel, that brings us, that also brings us back to Ruth's first ethical dilemma. It's a threshold question. It's not interview technique. It's, is this an interview I want to carry all the way through to a story because I
and it's not actually an interview, you know. It's a...
See, what I would do exactly... I would be saying... I would pass that on immediately to someone at the scene who could respond to whatever is going on with that kid. That it's not... It isn't your job. And yet you can't keep that to yourself either.
But you feel ethically, in a way, you know, because you've caused somebody to say something to you, you know.
No, I don't quite understand. How did you cause
Because you're there, and they feel like they should be talking to you, you know.
I mean, I would have to know more about, like, if I would, in the, you know, in a situation, if I'm like, in a fly-on-the-wall almost situation, if that's what you're there for, like, to basically talk, write a story about what these people are doing, is that correct?
If you're in someone's, like, cramped living room and everybody's talking, and you want people and parents to want you to come back with them, and so you are trying to build trust with families at the same time, but since it's the middle of a situation, it's not the day later, it's
right.
not a week later, so it feels like it's a different dynamic because of that, maybe?
Well, I mean, I would take my cues from whatever's going on in the situation, you know. I mean, if in one case you might, you know, it might just be sitting with the kid or doing something with the child, or, I mean, it just depends on the actual circumstance. I certainly wouldn't try to interview them or get information out of them.
Sure.
I would be observing
at that point
and relating on whatever small, very concrete way I could in that situation.
It's like, you know, you're going to be coming back, you know, so you do have to kind of balance that, you know.
I don't, what do you mean?
Well, you're going to be coming back and interacting with these families again and again.
Okay,
so.
Let's get Karen in on this. Yes.
Well, I actually wanted to take it in a slightly different place, which is interviewing kids about a trauma they've experienced when they're maybe too young to realize what it means for them to expose themselves to that degree. This has come up for me recently where a teenager, she was maybe 15, was telling me about she had bipolar disorder, but she had also gone through a rape, she'd gone through an abortion, she'd gone through a lot of stuff. She was very open and very articulate with me. And then time went on, and I went on and did other stories. And then 4 years later, when she was maybe 19, she got back in touch with me and said she regretted having told me all that stuff. Not at the time. She didn't. She wasn't accusing me of anything, but she was sorry that it was all out there for the public to see. Now she was in college. She was looking to get jobs. She was worried about how all that information was going to be taken by potential employers. And could she get it back somehow? Because in the world,
you guys had named her?
We had named her,
okay.
And we had releases signed by her parents, and so legally it wasn't an issue. But in the world of Google, people can look up that stuff. You know, this was a radio piece, but it was also it's been archived on Google, and you know, it was really too late. I kind of said, it's out there. You know, lots and lots of people have already heard it. You know, I can try and. My editor actually was offering to take her last name out of the Googled transcript, which I thought was rather unusual step, but he was offering to do that. But that really wasn't, there could have been duplicated many, many times. So I don't really have an answer for that, but I do think it's something to just keep in mind when young people can tell you about something that maybe later they'll regret.
Did it change your practice, Karen?
Well, you know, this is recent, just in the last few months that this has come back up again. But it's definitely made me think about next time I have to interview a young person about something like that. Maybe, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what I would do, because frankly, we're all journalists and we want to get that story out there. And there's definitely a tug of war about how much do you really encourage people to protect themselves and how much are you a journalist.
Let me place a small dilemma of mine on the table, and maybe you can counsel me on this one. Connie, who's very sensitive and very difficult to treat, brought her daughter Brandy in to see me. And as I was quite good at establishing rapport with Brandy, but Connie would say, tell the doctor, tell him. And I didn't know how to nicely squelch the mom, who was clearly inhibiting the daughter by telling her to talk to me.
See, that's much easier for me, yeah. Because in television, and I'm sure you'll back me up on this, you're interrupting. We're going to have to do this interview separately, because it's the audio's bleeding through, and we'll talk to you right after, so we'll take her into the
audio. Connie pays the bills.
And you go back and you talk to Connie afterwards, or you talk to Connie first, and you, yeah, so.
I want to respond to that because the thing about the teenager, yeah. I mean, I guess I'm a little, I mean, we don't name teenagers. We don't ever put their last names in. In fact, even a lot of times we don't use their real, I mean, we might use their middle name, or we don't even, I mean, to me, like, the bottom line with kids is you got to give them, I mean, in most cases, you should not name them. I mean, that's our policy at the newspaper, and so I'm wondering, like, does NPR think
NPR,
about those issues?
Well, NPR, and I did
for
do
that
the story.
Very reason.
I did do the story for NPR.
Out there forever.
They have the opposite. They do not run stories unless you name first
even
and last.
Kids? That seems really unusual.
They might, you know, maybe they would make an exception if they had to, but in this case, the parents were agreeing. Well, it wasn't, I mean, you make a good point. It wasn't a story about her rape. It was a story about her mental illness, and that had been something that happened, you know, like a couple years earlier. So it wasn't, I wasn't actually looking at her as a rape victim. It was, although I probably should have, but it was more I was looking at her in the context of what she'd been through having this disorder. That might be a way of taking care of it.
But, you know, it's interesting. When I was in Kansas City, another story that came up was a 7-year-old girl disappeared, and of course, you know what happens there. Everybody goes and blankets the neighborhood with pictures of the girl and her name and everything. Well, she was, was a pedophile who had moved into the neighborhood, abducted her, sexually assaulted her, strangled her, left her for dead, but she survived. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, her name's out there for forever. And, you know, I know it's different, but boy, I'll tell you, it's still, you know, and you have to do that first initial story, and you never know what's going to happen. But I struggled with that for a while afterwards, because it was just like, God, this poor girl, she's been, you know, attacked, and then this is going to be out there for forever, and
I
think that.
Excuse me. We'll take these questions and then let's move on from children to other issues so we get other interview challenges talked about. Yes.
I just wanted to add one thing, because all of you are speaking from the U.S. perspective. And for those of us who work overseas, it's often very different. I mean, I work for AP and we don't, you know, use the names of rape victims, and there are standards there that we subscribe to. But I see, and I'm a medical reporter, and I cover the Asia-Pacific region, so I see lots of things, and oftentimes when there's something happening, it's from the foreigner coming in, I find the families oftentimes are trying to please me, they're trying to please the other journalists that are there, and they kind of want to try to force the kids to talk. And I'm very uncomfortable with this, and oftentimes, you know, just say, I don't want to do this. But then I see the reporters sometimes, sometimes I see the foreign reporters doing crazy things, and then other times I see, too, the local journalists, and it's just kind of this, you know, take the sound bite from the kid, you know, get out. And it's just really disturbing on a lot of levels to me, because there's just no kind of respect for the child and what the child is going through, and the parents are just kind of going along with it.